Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Zipora Nyambura.
And I am Eddie Micah Jr. We're also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. You can share your thoughts on the stories that we're covering and we will read some of your comments.
Coming up, Botswana's president wraps up a national farewell tour before he steps down. But what's the general feeling about his departure?
The mood is mixed. There are those who are, we say, they are happy that he's gone because they don't like him, especially the opposition, who say, someone told me he was leading a very corrupt and wasteful government.
Also, Sierra Leone National Electoral Commission says they are all ready for the presidential runoff polls, and the locals' expectations are high.
Oh well, I feel very, very good going into this runoff. Everything has become standstill for the past 2 to 3 months in this country. Our children are not going to school. Business is very slow.
As the government will come, the basic challenges, education, youth employment, medical, then they look into the affairs of the feeding.
You heard it right. We have a lot lined up for you. But before all that, we hear what has been happening around the world.
I'm Sertan Sanderson with DW News. Israeli forces have killed at least 12 Palestinians as thousands took to the Gaza-Israel border in rallies, demanding the return of land that is currently held by Israel. More than 150 people were injured, according to the Palestinian Health Ministry. Israeli Defense Forces spokesperson Avichai Adrahi explained, however, that the authorities only responded to elements of aggression.
The Hamas movement and other organizations called for protests, calling it the March of Return. However, as events are taking place on the ground, it is the March of Chaos. There are protests and aggressive riots. The Israeli Defense Forces resisted it by using methods that break up protests. When some of the individuals who were starred by the protest leaders and the security heads tried to breach Israeli sovereignty and infiltrate into Israeli territory or to infringe on Israeli infrastructure, meaning the security wall, they were targeted by the Israeli Defense Forces.
Organizers said the mass demonstrations would continue until May 15, when Palestinians commemorate the so-called Nakba of 1948, where more than 700,000 Palestinians had to flee their land or were expelled during the war that led to the creation of Israel. That date is only one day after the new U.S. embassy in Jerusalem is expected to be revealed on May 14, a move that has angered many Palestinians. The tensions come on Easter weekend when thousands of Christians are expected to visit holy sites located across Israel. The Russian Foreign Ministry has summoned various Western envoys over a diplomatic crisis sparked by the poisoning of former Russian spy Sergei Skripal in the U.K., The German, French, Italian, British and Canadian ambassadors were among the 16 national envoys seen at the ministry building in the Russian capital. Moscow has also expelled a number of foreign diplomats, including 4 employees of the German embassy, in a tit-for-tat move, but says that it remains open to normalizing ties. The condition of ex-spy Skripal and his daughter, who had also taken ill from the poisoning, was meanwhile announced to have stabilized. You're listening to DW News. A court in Senegal has sentenced opposition leader Khalifa Sall on Friday to 5 years in prison for embezzlement and falsifying documents. Sall was arrested a year ago on suspicion of embezzling, the equivalent of $3.5 million. Sall, who is the mayor of Dakar, has denied the charges against him, saying they were politically motivated. Botswana's president, Ian Khama, is stepping down tomorrow, having served the constitutional maximum of 10 years in office. Khama will be succeeded by Vice President Mokgweetsi Masisi, 18 months before the next elections. Under Khama's leadership, Botswana's economy has witnessed rapid growth, despite skyrocketing unemployment. But the 65-year-old leader has also been criticized for his autocratic style. Khama's father, Seretse Khama, was Botswana's first president in 1966, after the Southern African nation gained independence from the United Kingdom. And for more news and information, please log on to dw.com. I'm Sertan Sanderson.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link program. I'm Eddie Micah Jr.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. First, I'd like to welcome all our Facebook listeners, Ben Hambo, Esubi Torres. Keep listening because we have much more lined up for you. We begin today's program in Botswana. President Ian Khama has just wrapped up a national farewell tour before he steps down tomorrow after serving the constitutional maximum of 10 years in office.
Khama is known as a leader who has not shied off from publicly condemning African leaders who have shown unwillingness to step down despite their time in office coming to an end.
He will now be succeeded by Vice President Mokgweetsi Masisi just 18 months before elections. To shed more light on this, I talk to Botswana's journalist Saone Segaisho. He starts by telling us the general feeling among the people a day before Khama steps down.
The mood is mixed. There are those who are, we say, they are happy that he's gone because they don't like him, especially the opposition, who say, someone told me he was leading a very corrupt and wasteful government. But members of his cabinet and members of his own party are happy that he is leaving. More so that he is leaving them with a legacy to look up to. The issue of gifts, some they were happy that he didn't cling on to power like his African counterpart.
In your view, what kind of legacy is President Khama leaving behind?
I would call it a bittersweet legacy because it has its downs. In 2010, he came with the presidential housing appeal. You know, Botswana is we have a small population, so he managed to build 800 houses for the poor. The other thing that people would remember him with is that he would go to the villages and listen to people's problems and call the public servants or the president who was on the ground, unlike other presidents, find them on TV and on the news. Economically, I don't think he brought a lot of things. He did come with a plan called Economic Stimulus Plan. He took money from the reserves and he injected it into the economy so that he can build other projects and he can improve.
There are critics who have described him as authoritarian. Do you think this is also part of the legacy he leaves behind?
His hostility towards the media, and even few weeks ago, he attacked the media for the corruption case that has been talked about in this country, where he is implicated of having gained through corruption or something. Like, for example, some say he tried to control the appointment of judges. And there was a case, I think it was last year, he tried to stop appointment of a judge. So some people said he tried by all means to extend his presidential power. He wanted to be over even the judiciary and he wanted to control everything.
Botswana's journalist Saone Segaisho. And of course, on our Facebook page, all our listeners have been talking about this topic. And one Michael O'Michael says, African countries should emulate Botswana in all ramifications, especially in the area of population. He says Nigeria particularly should reduce its population from 200 million to 2 million.
How is that even possible?
I don't know.
200 million to 2 million. Well, many other comments came through. Nia Mbazia says, he's a great man following in his father's footsteps. The result of his work can be seen by all. In La Republic, the Cameroon, the 87-year-old president who can barely talk or walk, is determined to continue.
And one good one, last one here from Joe Omogibo, who says, I hope the West African leaders learn from you.
Well, those are some of your comments. Getting to the end of the show, we'll try to read the rest of them. But moving on, now Russia has expelled 4 German diplomats after Germany expelled same number of Russians from the country. This comes after Russia earlier expelled 60 US diplomats and will close Washington's consulate in St. Petersburg. Now, they've announced further diplomatic expulsions against other countries joining London and Washington in censoring Moscow. Earlier today, one Irish diplomat, one Norwegian diplomat, 2 Spanish diplomats, a Croatian diplomat, have all been expelled by Russia in nerve agent poisoning dispute. This comes after the Kremlin was accused by London of poisoning a former double agent in Britain.
Now, European powerhouses Germany and France have joined US and London in expelling Russian diplomats, and Moscow had warned it will retaliate in kind. And they have. Amidst all the tit-for-tat, the Kremlin maintains that they are open for dialogue. The German ambassador to Russia, Rudiger von Frisch, has called for more openness from Russia in dealing with the current situation. He said, and I quote, "It is in Germany's interest to stay in good relations with Russia, that Russia and German people understand each other." He said, "We stay open and ready for dialogue."
Now, you know, more than 150 Russian diplomats and counting, it seems, have been ordered out of EU and NATO member countries over its alleged involvement in the poisoning of Sergei Skripal and his daughter with a nerve agent in southwestern England on March 4th. So, Sipora, it looks like it's going to be continuing, and we'll try to update listeners whenever we get any more info.
Yeah, and of course, you can read more on that on our DW News page. But now we go back to Africa, and this time to Sierra Leone. The Sierra Leone National Electoral Commission says all is set for the presidential runoff elections tomorrow. Mohamed Farr Ali Conte, the chairman of the National Electoral Commission, says that all is ready. The runoff will pit Samura Kamura from the ruling party against opposition leader Julius Maada Bio. The winner will replace President Ernest Koroma after neither of the candidates secured enough votes for an outright win in the first round. Our DW correspondent Claudia Anthony talked to the National Electoral Chairman, who sought to clarify on the issue with the security forces.
Well, it's good. We're working together. We've been working together. It's fine. We're collaborating. We can't succeed without the assistance of the police, without them actually. I agree there are irregularities. But this is completely different from fraud. As I speak to you, nobody has gone to court to petition the results.
So do you think that that situation whereby this few set of neck staff got involved somehow in malpractices, do you think that will dampen the mood, the trust that Sierra Leoneans had in neck?
Well, I want to say it's not a malpractice. Still, I want to say there are irregularities. Of course, and maybe a few problems, right? But I don't expect that to dampen the spirit of NEC staff or the credibility of NEC. We're a credible institution, right? We are committed to conduct credible elections.
Sierra Leone's National Electoral Chairman Mohamed Ali Conte talking to Claudia Anthony.
Now, Zipora, the expectations are very high among many people in Sierra Leone. Let's take a listen.
Oh, well, I feel very, very good going into this runoff. Everything has become standstill for the past 2 to 3 months in this country. Our children are not going to school. Business is very slow. We just pray that we have a peaceful transition and a government that, at the end of the day, everyone will accept.
Any government will come. The basic challenges, education, youth employment, medical, then they look into the affairs of the feeding. Now, this nation, the food affairs, because now, when you check the market system, no price control, all things just the up, you know, and everybody suffer the shouts here and there.
Those were very high expectations, like we said, and so well, we hope the elections go fair and smooth, Zipporah.
Yeah, we hope so. And sure to go back also to our top story about Botswana, whose president is stepping down. We have quite lots of reactions because many people see this as a good precedent for African leaders.
It's interesting how people come up with different comments. Now, Jewola Simeone says, thank you for respecting the constitution.
And of course, there's someone who's by the name Clemens Lema who says, I do appreciate his service not only in Botswana, but all over Africa for showing practically how democracy works.
An interesting one, Zipporah, from Isaac Ehusa. Godwin says, why would he just hand over power like that? No elections? Don't they practice democracy?
I think that is the best democracy that is ready to step down anyway. And there's one, Tam Venuna, who says he actually hopes these are the kind of leaders we need in Africa.
Well, I would agree with that for sure. Omar Junior says elections are in next year, but he did what Joseph Kabila and other African despots fear doing. Bravo, Kama.
And of course, on Sierra Leone, people are also talking about the runoff elections tomorrow. And Idris Kata says, we want to vote and forget about this election. There are a lot of corrupt systems that need to be fixed under the leadership of our next president.
Quick one before we move on. Leaders are chosen by God and loved by the peoples. Used ballot, not bullets, to choose political leaders, from Thabo Mbeki.
So keep those comments coming. Welcome back to the program. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Eddie Micah Jr.
Also welcoming our Facebook listeners on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Coming up today on African Roots, we hear about one man who is remembered as a free spirit and a rebellious scholar.
He became a national icon in today's Mali. Ahmed Baba and his time represent the end of Timbuktu's greatness.
Well, you have to stick around for that, plus our sports segment with Davies van Optorp from our sports sticks, of course. But before that, we head to Zimbabwe. Ahead of elections later this year in August, independent candidates have joined forces to launch a new political coalition. The candidates who will be running for local government office in the city of Harare formed the coalition called POVO, meaning the people's own voice. DW's correspondent in Zimbabwe, Privilege Mishaniri, spoke to Pastor Evan Mwarire, a co-founder of the political coalition. He first asked, what inspired the formation of POVO?
The formation of POVO, the People's Own Voice, has been informed by the desperate need that the city of Harare finds itself in terms of service delivery. Up to today, we still deliver very dirty and very dangerous water to the residents of Harare. We have got potholes. Our road network is completely dilapidated and needs to, you know, be revived again. Those are the kind of things that my generation feels urgently need attention.
How important is it for you to be running as independent candidates?
Independent candidates are not tied down to parties that have also sorts of, you know, a messaging that sometimes doesn't speak to the community. Independent candidates come from that very community. So they live the life every day that they are trying to change. And they're crafting their message and their solutions around what they are harvesting from the people that are around them. If our people are not allowed to participate in the elections and governance, then I don't think that Zimbabwe will go anywhere as soon.
Does this signal your entry into mainstream politics?
I've been in mainstream politics in terms of speaking into it for the last 2 years, and there is nothing that has changed. All I have done is to say I am now going to become a candidate. But it's important for Zimbabweans to be involved in the politics of our nation. Nobody should disengage. Everyone is involved in politics. If you are a registered voter, you are actually the central aspect of politics in Zimbabwe.
What kind of politics are you going to be bringing in as you start this journey?
There is definitely going to be a break from the past politics of violence, of hate speech, and of mudslinging, because that's what has been part of our politics in Zimbabwe. We have to engage each other more. I think that the kind of politics we are bringing as the People's Own Voice is the politics and the contestation of ideas. Instead of mudslinging each other, let's mudsling the ideas. Let's interrogate ideas. And I think that politics will take us further. We want the people of Zimbabwe to choose candidates based on policies, based on ideas, and not based on the fact that they have been marshaled or forced to choose a particular candidate and they have been, you know, intimidated to do so.
There's a growing desire across the continent, including Zimbabwe, for young people to take a stand and be in leadership positions. Why is it important for young people to be in control of their destiny at this time in Africa?
It's extremely important in Africa, and in, particularly in Zimbabwe, for young people to be involved in things like running for local government or central government politics, because we are starting to take control of our narrative and of our future. We are the people that are going to be here 20, 30, 40 years from now. We are the ones who will have children 20, 30, 40 years from now. So we must craft our future today. That's why it's important for young people to get into politics, to begin to rise up, because Africa needs people that are going to be in the future to start crafting their future today.
Zimbabwe's Evan Mwarire talking to our correspondent Privilege Mashirini. So, Zipporah, from pastor to politician, interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's a question we actually put on our Facebook page. We did ask, what's your opinion on clergymen running for political office? And the reactions are very overwhelming. Hussein Adams says there's nothing wrong with him contesting for the election once he is a citizen and of a sound mind.
Well, Valerie Vibern says, Joachim Gauck, the immediate past president of Germany, was a cleric. I strongly believe that the church, just like other religions of virtue, have a role to play in shaping society. At one moment, was the Pope not as powerful as the King of the world? Interesting one there, Zipporah.
Yeah, Isaac Godwin says, since no constitutional limits for running for the election, he's good to go.
Well, finally, Mo Cromer says, this clearly shows that he's definitely going to forgo the church for political engagements. You can't do two things with due diligence at the same time. I think he will spend a good amount of time with politics than the church. Then if happened, then it means that's going to be a situation with God. So, well, this is a very interesting combination, religion with politics, God, all of that. Well,
yeah, so keep that conversation going on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
DW, African Roots.
Now, Timbuktu in northern Mali was once fabled for its wealth. By the 14th century, the city nestled on the edge of the Sahara had become a revered center for Islamic scholarship and bustling trade center. It flourished from merchants meeting to buy salt, gold, ivory, and slaves. Among those who contributed to Timbuktu's fame is a great African scholar, Ahmed Baba. Here is his story.
Dear Ahmed Baba, we, the inhabitants of Twat, consult you, prominent jurist of Timbuktu, so that you enlighten us about the question of slavery. We would like to know if black Africans are slaves in essence, or if, once they are converted and Muslims, they should be free. What is your opinion on that question? We would be very grateful to you.
When Ahmed Baba receives this request, it is the beginning of the 17th century. The scholar lives in Timbuktu, where he was probably born in 1556, in the northern part of today's Mali. This city bases its prosperity on an Islamic university famous throughout West Africa, and on trade, including slave trade. Ahmed Baba's answer to the inhabitants of Tuat comes in the form of a fatwa, a legal advice. Bernard Salvain, Professor Emeritus of History and Specialist in Malian Manuscript Culture, explains what this text contains.
He points out that slavery is only legitimate for non-Muslims, regardless of their origin, whether black or white. So this is not a question of race. It must be noted that many people had prejudices according to which black people were slaves and pagans by nature. In this respect, Ahmed Baba's answer can therefore be considered as innovative. At the same time, of course, it legitimates in terms of Islamic law, the capture of unbelievers during the jihad. Capture des non-croyants lors des jihad.
Besides slavery, Ahmed Baba also takes a stand against his city's annexation by the Moroccans. On May the 30th, 1591, Timbuktu falls into the hands of the Moroccan Sultan Ahmed al-Mansur. Ahmed Baba and several other intellectuals are arrested and taken to Morocco, bound in chains. After several months spent in prison, he is placed under house arrest in Marrakesh. Impressed by his knowledge, the Sultan allows him to teach. His fame extends in Maghreb, and it is during this long exile that Ahmed Baba finishes one of his most famous manuscripts, the Kifayat al-Muhtaj. It contains several hundred biographical texts about the life of great men of letters and scholars who lived between the 13th century and Ahmed Baba's time. It is only after Sultan Ahmed al-Mansur's death that Ahmed Baba is allowed to go back home. He dies in Timbuktu in 1627 at the respectable age of 71. Today, students and researchers can come and admire and decipher copies of these manuscripts at the Institute of Higher Learning and Islamic Research, the Ahmed Baba Center.
He became a national icon in today's Mali. Ahmed Baba and his time represent the end of Timbuktu's greatness. Furthermore, we can relate to him when he stresses the equality of all believers before God, regardless of their origin, of their skin color. Then, of course, there is also his resistance to the occupant, which caused him to be deported.
In today's Mali, Ahmed Baba is remembered as a free spirit, a rebellious scholar, but his fame does not end in West Africa. On the planet Mercury, there is a crater named after him.
You have been listening to African Roots, a special series brought to you in cooperation with the Gerda Henkel Foundation. That report was compiled by Constance Fisher.
Moving on, Zipporah, in sports, league action resumes in Europe after international friendly matches were played last weekend. Seven games remain in the German Bundesliga, but it seems Bayern will sooner than later be crowned champions. Now, I caught up with DW's Davies van Optorp from the sports desk to talk about some upcoming fixtures. I first sought his thoughts on the biggest clash of the weekend between Bayern München and Borussia Dortmund.
Well, they're without Marco Reus, who has scored 3 goals in 5 games since he returned from his long absence at the beginning of the season because of a knee injury. They have some other players that can replace him, namely Christian Pulisic, who's their American star. But it's Bayern Munich have still, unless they put out a reserve side preparing for the Champions League midweek, I really don't see how Borussia Dortmund can get the better of Bayern Munich this weekend.
Well, there's been also reports their star man or main striker, Robert Lewandowski. Real Madrid may be knocking on his door. Reports suggesting he's eager to join them. I mean, you think it's going to happen, really?
Yeah, his agent seems to be really pushing for it, definitely. He's had some scuffles in training with some of the Bayern Munich players. A few weeks ago, he had a scuffle with Mats Hummels, and Mats Hummels basically called him out for his lack of effort in training. He has a few years left on his contract. I'm not sure that Bayern Munich are going to let him leave this summer unless they have an option that can replace him, and I think that will happen first before Lewandowski would go to a Real Madrid. But yeah, it does seem that Real Madrid's is the most likely place for him to go, considering in comments he has said previously he's named Real Madrid his favorite destination to go beyond Bayern Munich.
Another team in the Bundesliga, they are currently rooted at the bottom of the table. Hamburger SV, never been relegated. Can they survive this time? They're going to be playing away to Stuttgart.
Not this time. They might be able to get a point from Stuttgart, but Stuttgart themselves have been on a very impressive run under their new coach, Typhoon Korkut. There's just too much turmoil at Hamburg right now. They're in their third coach now this season alone. A lot of their players are upset that they're not playing, and when they do play, there has definitely been a lack of effort on the field to try to turn things around. So I definitely think that this is the year that Hamburg is going to go to the second division.
Arguably, one of the biggest clashes this weekend is between Juventus and AC Milan. What do you expect in this one?
In terms of football, I do not expect Juventus to drop points in this match. AC Milan, although they spent a lot of money in the summer, have still not seemed to have turned their fortunes around. They did make it to the Europa League last 16, but were, of course, knocked out. And Juventus, of course, in the Champions League quarterfinals now. The title race in Italy is between them and Napoli, and I don't expect that Juventus is going to drop points against AC Milan in this title race.
That was Davies van Opdorp from DW Sports Desk.
First, let me give a mention to all our Facebook listeners. Momodu Kamara from Gambia says he's listening live from Spain. And of course, we have James Otogwa, who is talking about the elections in Sierra Leone. And he says voting SLPP is the only way forward for Sierra Leone. So keep that conversation and keep on writing to us. We're always eager to read from you.
Thank you guys for the listening. Now, our Facebook page has been very busy for sure. Now, we posted this. Poverty is driving some Kenyan men to rent out their wives as prostitutes to tourists. Now, we asked you, would you rent out your partner for cash? And I must say, Zipporah, very interesting comments coming through.
Yeah, of course, Biko Azinyema says, and how on earth would a good husband who loves his wife agree to that?
I asked myself the same question. Oduro Kweju says, question should be, would you allow yourself to be rented?
Okay, he's actually responding to Biko Azinyema.
Exactly.
And Della Fatuyu says, there are issues President Uhuru Kenyatta and his government should be focusing on and not trivialities like deporting a citizen, Miguna Miguna, and usurping powers of the courts. Dealing with the root causes of this should be a major headache for a serious government because, he says, poverty is driving force behind such an action. How can you rent your wife to another man? Unheard of, he says.
Yeah, these are the issues. I'm not sure to laugh at it or to really treat it as that serious because it is very serious. Now, Efrem Ikeduru says poverty was there and will be there up to the end of the world. It's not poverty that's the reason, but it is lack of morale and discipline.
Yeah, thank you very much for your comments. And we're always eager to hear from you. Go to our Facebook page for more conversation. I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Eddie Micah Jr.
Bye for now.